Welcome to episode 382 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
There will be links with more information available on the show page, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. Those are interesting swallowing noises that they're not going to hear those. Okay, I have a job. Phil has a show of his very own, which you can find by visiting brothersbarton.net,
That's me.
Where I totally screwed that up was. Explaining malted grain, but we don't need to talk about that now.
Yeah.
It's enzymes you get from malted grain.
Oh, so yes. Small bugs, though, right?
Yes. Well, enzymes aren't bugs. Anyway, again, Brothers Barton. We're doing great
here. Science.
Don't forget to join us on Patreon, patreon.com/ The Lab with Brad, or check us out on Twitter, @LOBBYANDLAB, @LobbyandLab. Good stuff. Great times. We're talking about microbiology.
Tiny.
This being the first tiny that we're going to do, or the first episode, which is not tiny. It's going to be a long one. The idea that there were little bitty critters has actually popped up over and over again, and then disappeared, and then popped up again, along with other ideas that weren't so right. I heard a rumor only from Wikipedia. I didn't bother to try and check it. The Jainists used to believe that disease was caused by things too small to see.
Oh, look out.
They happen to be correct. According to the introductory notes of the Kalevala, the Finnish folk medicine included an idea of little bitty dwarvish looking guys, you know, with beards and hats, too small to see, who cause bread to rise, beer to ferment, and various skin infections, which is a pretty close description, except for the beard and the hat, of yeast.
No beards on yeast, huh? Okay.
But, ideas come and go, and some of them have lasted for thousands of years, even though they're wrong.
That's the discouraging side of
4th century BC, good old Aristotle wrote about, we don't know if this was his idea to begin with or if he picked it up from somewhere else, a concept called spontaneous generation. Unable to see things like spores or little bitty eggs, they had come to the conclusion that under the right conditions, dead things could make live things. Spontaneously, thus the name, spontaneous generation.
Okay.
Like fleas would just magically grow out of dust.
Right.
Eggs would show up in new, fish would show up in new ponds.
Just magically, yes.
Frogs in the mud, you know, maggots on meat.
That's the one I was thinking of, you leave a dead body around and...
And bad things.
Yeah, gross.
You thought that maybe there was some sort of numinous force in the air. You know, they'd observe that if you rob an animal of breath, they're not so much living anymore. So obviously life force is in the air, and that mixes with the dead matter and makes live matter.
Okay.
Sort of.
Is this leading up to the humors?
The humors were a little earlier. That was Hippocrates, the creator of the Hippocratic Oath, who actually believed in hygiene for medicine.
Oh, look out.
Which is another idea that came and went. Too bad. let's fast forward a bit to the 2nd century AD and our old pal Galen.
Galen.
Roman physician, as in... You know, the country of Rome. Did work in the city for a while before the assassins chased him out of town.
Oh, really? What did he do?
Medicine. It was a cutthroat business. Now, this one's neat because he came up with a good idea for the wrong reasons. He had the miasmic theory that air would go bad and form a miasma, and he had come to the conclusion that it would rise from stagnant water and sewage. So the Romans, he was a big name at the time. This is why, they don't send assassins after small names.
No.
They just send thugs.
Hey, what you talking about, man?
He convinced them that they should bring in fresh water with the aqueducts and take out sewage.
That makes so much sense. I mean, okay... Just because miasmas or whatever is kind of, it makes sense.
Again, doing the right thing for the wrong reasons.
I'll take it.
To move on, we have to move way later.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's some descriptions of using cut crystals and hunks of glass and even curved mirrors for some magnification.
Ooh.
And writers in the ancient Greek and Rome and other places,
mm-hmm.
we didn't really get into microscopes until much, much later.
Oh, okay.
The first compound microscope doesn't show up until 1590.
Mm-hmm.
Compound microscope meaning use more than one lens.
Oh,
even that was like 10 times normal size magnification.
Ooh.
Barely anything at all. It was, however, enough for good old Robert Hooke
mm-hmm.
to take a look at cork and other plants and notice, hey, they're cells.
Yes,
even
okay.
coined the term,
mm-hmm.
partially because these were dead plants and all the stuff on the inside was gone already. And most of the structural strength for plants comes from the cell walls.
Mm-hmm.
So he saw, well, these look like bricks or yeah. bubbles or empty cavities or cells.
Yes. Yes. All right.
That didn't happen until 1660.
Okay.
Later, we get Anton van Leeuwenhoek.
Oh, nice.
He was Dutch.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure I'm butchering the name. I mean, as usual.
Right. I mean, no hope for us here.
He wanted magnifying glasses in order to examine the fabric that was being produced by his factory.
Huh.
And get a look at the thread count and quality.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere along the line, he got focused, on making things bigger and bigger, magnification-wise.
This is amazing.
Came up with a couple of new techniques. Got all the way up to 300 times normal size image.
Hey, okay.
He's the first one to see animal cells and, in a drop of water,
mm-hmm.
What was translated as animalcules.
Animalcules.
Or wee little beasties.
I like that last one. Wee, huh? Was he Irish?
No, anyway. Dutch.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was being translated by a fellow from the Royal Society
oh.
who had come to take a look at his wild claims mm-hmm. in 1676 and then convinced the guy. Anton wasn't a scientist. He didn't think he was a scientist, but he kept seeing things no one else was seeing.
Yeah.
So this guy from the Royal Society said, just write us letters. Please, just keep writing us letters.
You may not care, but holy crap, this is amazing.
Robert Hooke was a little annoyed because Anton was not sharing the secrets of how to make these lenses.
Oh.
And Robert Hooke was like, hey, we got a whole new discipline of science here, and it's all resting upon the shoulders of one dude.
That makes rugs? What does he do?
Yeah. So he eventually got invited to join, and did join, the Royal Society. But he never showed up for a single meeting. He didn't even show up for the induction ceremony. He was in Deutschland. They're all the way over there in London.
Going all the way over to the snooty sons of, yeah.
Now, despite the fact that cells had been found and microscopic creatures, the ideas that had been holding on kept holding on.
Hmm.
And we talked about that on Monday. Our sponsors today include death, taxes, and government spending.
Yes. All those things you can't get away from. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. There's no escape. We are talking about microbiology.
Yes.
Yes, which has been closely linked to medicine for quite some time.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we're going to go back to a pioneer
mm-hmm.
who barely got any attention at all in the 1840s, early 1840s.
Okay.
Let's see if I can get this guy's name right. He was in Hungary.
Was he also tiny?
You
know, they start microbiology by naming it after the 4-foot guy that started it.
The shortest guy.
Sorry.
Ignaz Semmelweis.
He actually sounds kind of tall.
Hmm. Ignaz. He was working at a clinic.
Okay.
It was a free clinic for expecting mothers.
Oh, okay.
Come in and give birth.
Mm-hmm.
Half the time, they would see local midwives.
Mm-hmm.
The other half the time, they would see physicians and medical students.
Mm, okay.
Now, at the time, something running around called child bed fever.
Oh, look out.
It was a nasty, fatal disease, and close to 1 in 10 women were dying from it.
The women? Oh, really?
Yes. And strangely, more of them were dying when being attended by physicians and medical students than by the midwives.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
No.
You would expect, yeah.
You'd expect it to be the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, at the time, autopsies were a preferred method for teaching medical students.
Okay. Let's see where this is going.
So Ignis noticed a few things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things he noticed is that if there was a vacation and the medical students weren't around and nobody did any autopsies, there were fewer deaths.
Oh.
Next thing he noticed is that the smell of the cadavers,
mm-hmm,
and their, you know, putrefaction was a lot like the smell of the women who had been infected and died from childbed theater.
Really?
Theater.
That's a very morbid troupe.
Childbed fever. Which is not a song or a dance.
No. Holy crap.
He went on to notice that, hey, after you do an autopsy, the putrid smell tended to cling to your hands.
Okay.
He's starting to do a little thinking here.
Mm-hmm.
Then, the final straw, a friend and colleague of his was doing an autopsy on one of the women who had died from childbed fever,
mm-hmm,
and nicked his finger in the process.
Oh.
And then died.
Oh.
From symptoms very much like childbed fever.
Okay.
So, Ignis correctly deduced that there must be something in putrefaction that was moving from the cadavers to the women by the hands of the students and physicians.
What year was this again? 18...
This was, he started his work in the early 1840s.
Okay.
So, they know he came nothing. Up with this idea.
Yeah.
Maybe they should wash their hands.
Novel! Right.
This guy knew nothing about microbiology. It wasn't a discipline yet.
Mm.
The germ theory of disease was floating around, but it wasn't a very popular one.
Right. Every time.
He had heard not word one about it. So all he did was go by just pure empirical evidence. But yeah, he instigates this policy that you will wash your hands when you're done with an autopsy and even between living patients.
That makes sense.
The incidences of childbed fever dropped down to a quarter of what they were before.
Ooh, he's on to something.
But nobody believed him.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. For one thing, it took him forever to publish. He didn't publish until 1861.
Oh,
and
okay, yeah.
What he published was sort of a rambling thing with a lot of extraneous sort of political maunderings in it.
Goodness sakes, okay.
He was also somewhat of an irascible fellow.
Irascible?
Yes, irritable, hot-tempered.
Right.
Dogmatic, inflexible.
Mm-hmm.
So when he started talking about all this, he automatically sort of put everyone's back up so that they would be dogmatic and inflexible right back at him.
Yep. I don't care what you're saying anymore because you're not nice.
You're such a jerk.
Yeah.
He eventually was committed to an insane asylum.
Really?
Where he died at age 47.
Did he nick his finger working on somebody's brain?
No, he was not a doctor in the insane asylum. He was a patient.
Oh, right.
And actually, how he died is a little uncertain. There's some rumors that he may have been injured while trying to escape. And then those wounds got infected. Which a little ironic there. Maybe you should have washed. Meanwhile, over in England, merry old England, the similar story, except instead of Ignis, the irascible soul that he was, it was a very well thought of doctor named Jon Snow.
Okay.
Who just walked right out of Game of Thrones and into the hospital.
I've read that book. Yes. Winter is coming.
Well, cholera was coming.
Oh.
Over and over again. Lots of outbreaks in the 1840s and 1850s.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1849, he published a little pamphlet where he suggested that there's some sort of disease-causing agent in water or perhaps food.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1854, an outbreak of cholera happens in London.
Oh, look out.
And he went around and interviewed people who had gotten sick,
mm-hmm,
and paid attention to where the most incidences of the infection were coming from.
Okay.
And the biggest culprit was a pumping station where people would go get their drinking water that happened to be downstream from a sewer outlet in the River Thames.
Yeah, you know, that's obvious to us now.
Yes, very obvious. Now, using patient interviews and statistical methods like he did, that hadn't been done before. Mm. They're pretty standard practices in epidemiology,
Oof.
The study of epidemics. Yeah. But he started it.
Oh, good
old Jon Snow.
Jon Snow, go for him.
So the...
Go for him? Go for him.
The London city decided to take the handle off of that pump.
Thou shalt leave the water alone.
Go find water somewhere else.
Upstream, maybe.
And by that time, the epidemic was already dying out, and that seemed to stop it. But it wasn't just that. It was also novel concepts like maybe we should wash the clothing and bedding of sick patients.
That makes sense.
Maybe we should isolate the sick people from the healthy people. And hey, boil your drinking water. Whereas Ignis got no credit and got no love for what he came up with, everybody liked Jon Snow's ideas.
That kind of flies in the face, because usually you come up with something that's true in science, and everybody hates you for it, and they think you're full of crap. Jon Snow seems to have just... How well liked was he?
Well, one out of two ain't bad. Yes, the progress of science is not always smooth.
No kidding.
I mean, just listen to the show. Right. We're not always smooth. So, came back up with that idea that maybe we shouldn't drink sewage. And hygiene. Oh, yeah.
Oh, soap.
Took a while, but we got there eventually. Even though, like the guy who came up with the hand washing, there were physicians who just absolutely refused to do that, and thought weird. The idea that they could be carrying infection was insulting.
Yeah.
But, you know, people can be stubborn.
And dumb. Even doctors.
Even doctors. Even smart people can be stupid.
Look at us.
We're at least stupid. We don't know about the smart people thing.
All right. I accidentally complimented us.
So let's at least take a stab at getting rid of the spontaneous generation idea.
Okay.
1668, Francesco Red.
Okay.
And other than the name and the year, I don't know anything about this guy.
Well,
he wasn't entirely convinced by the spontaneous generation theory.
Oh.
And so he decided to do an experiment.
Okay.
He took meat.
Meat.
And he put one in a container with a little drop cloth over the top so that air could get in, but flies could not.
Okay.
And the other one he just put in a container with nothing blocking the top.
Okay.
Both air and flies could get in.
Nice.
And as it turns out, you don't get maggots unless the flies land on the meat.
Nice. Okay.
So that was one of the first holes poked in the spontaneous generation theory. The miasma theory took quite a bit more to get rid of.
That makes sense.
Which we'll talk about
hey.
Next time. See you then.
Bye.